This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today we're going to be talking about Haiti after the second coup against Aristide. And with me to talk about this is journalist and filmmaker Kevin Pina, who is the Haiti special correspondent for KPFA's Flashpoint program of the Pacifica Network. He's also associate editor of Black Commentator and the founding editor of the Haiti Information Project. His latest film, which we're going to be talking about today, is Haiti, The Untold Story. Kevin Pina, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Good morning. My pleasure to be here, Matt.
How'd you get interested in Haiti?
Well, you know, I'm a filmmaker by trade. My first film was on El Salvador called In the Name of Democracy.
This was in the mid-'80s, right? During the middle of all that death squad stuff.
This was the elections that brought, the U.S.-sponsored elections that brought José Napoleón Duarte to power. The so-called centrist alternative in battle between the forces of the ultra-left and the ultra-right. Of course, that was a big lie that was put on us by the Reagan administration that justified 90,000 people dying in El Salvador in that brutal, horrible civil war. Then I was one of the producers of a film called Berkeley in the 60s, which was nominated for an Academy Award in 1990.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And then after that, Amazonia, Voices from the Rainforest, Chico Mendez, the Yanomami, the Itiwiwawao. The fact that we can't lament that the forest is being cut down and, oh, dear me, we're going to die. But there are actually people living in the forest who are on the front line defending it who are dying long before it's going to affect us. And that's the Yanomami and the Itiwiwawao. People like Chico Mendez, of course, who was assassinated by land barons, cattle barons, because he was trying to protect rainforest land from being burned, slashed and burned.
And did you have footage of him?
Oh, yeah. And wonderful, wonderful interview in that film.
What was he like?
Oh, very brave man. My contact with him was briefer than my colleagues in the film, but the short contact, the time that I met him and filmed him, what an extraordinary man. Just like Archbishop Romero, what an extraordinary person, you know? People who risk their lives for cause, for other people. They shine. I mean, you've met them, Matt. Come on, man.
It's hard to understand their courage, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But luckily, it keeps coming, you know? There's new folks picking up the mantle every day. It never ends, thank God. You know, it keeps going. So after Amazonia, I wanted to do another film. And the story of this liberation theology priest, Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide, who was running for the presidency of Haiti in 1990, was just too compelling for me to pass up. And so I made my next film, Haiti, Harvest of Hope. And that was chronicling Aristide's first election victory, his first 6 months in office before the brutal military coup. I never expected that. You know, I was making a film about democracy coming to Haiti after 186 years, and then there's a coup in the middle of it. And I sort of had to change
change the plot line a little bit.
Yeah, I sure did. So I went back and then chronicled the machinations of the brutal Haitian military and how they transformed Haiti into the major transshipment point for cocaine bound for the United States, and how they were eating themselves alive, breaking up into small drug fiefdoms. You know, there was that transition from the Medellin cartel to the Cali cartel, and it really happened in Haiti. And then after Pablo Escobar was killed in December of 1993, oh, the generals just went crazy. You know, I mean, millions and millions. You know, that's a lot of money. A lot of money involved. And so they began to eat themselves alive. Remember, the United States government had a huge investment in the Haitian military. They'd created it. They'd funded it. They'd trained it in the School of the Americas. And suddenly their boys are disintegrating right before their eyes. So Clinton intervenes ostensibly to restore democracy in Aristide, but really to salvage the Haitian military from eating itself alive and disintegrating over the proceeds of the cocaine trade. Aristide, of course, forced by the Clinton administration to sign International Monetary Fund, World Bank, Inter-American Development Bank agreements, and we know what those are. You have no state-owned industries. You do no funding for social services, as if social services actually exist in a country as poor as Haiti.
And subsidies on basic food items and gas. And
while the United States subsidized rice growers in Montana and California to export to sell in Haiti, you know. Aristide said it was tantamount to my having a gun put to my head. I really felt like I had to sign those agreements to stop the killing of my people and to be returned. So Aristide, amidst much fanfare, is returned in 1994. And immediately upon his return, the base of the people who had elected him president by the highest plurality of the vote of any elected head of state in the history of the Western Hemisphere, 67% of the vote, they began to wage a campaign for Aristide to be able to resume the 3 years that he lost in exile. Remember, he was in exile for 3 years while the military were just chewing the Haitian people up and at the same time getting wealthy off the cocaine trade. Well, the United States said no. While you were in Washington for those 3 years, we treated you like you were the president of Haiti. Therefore, you were the president of Haiti, and those 3 years you spent in exile are lost to you and the Haitian people forever. At that point, Aristide decided, hey, the gloves are off. You guys want to play like that? Okay. I'm going to renege on the IMF, World Bank, IADB, loans and agreements. I'm going to abolish your boys in the military, becoming the second country in the hemisphere. Well, in the world, actually, I guess, if you look at it, to abolish its own military. Costa Rica did it in 1948. And more than that, I'm going to take the profits from the two plums of the state-owned industries, the telephone company and the electricity company, and I'm going to invest them in a universal literacy campaign where every adult between the age of 30 to 60, 5 days a week, between the hours of 5 to 7, can go to a free literacy class. Now remember that when Aristide was first elected in 1990, the illiteracy rate in Haiti was 90%. When he was ousted the second time, February 29, 2004, it had been cut in half to 45%.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Kevin Pina, a filmmaker about Haiti. He's made a couple films on Haiti. The last one, the most current one, is Haiti, The Untold Story. Were you surprised then with the overthrow of Aristide in 2004?
Well, no, not at all, because as I was explaining, he returned in 1994. He reneged on the World Bank IMF loans and agreements, the treaties that the Clinton administration forced him to sign under duress. He took profits from state-owned industries and put them into quote-unquote social programs. He abolished the Haitian military. And then on his way out the door, to add insult to injury, he gave official diplomatic recognition to Cuba. Well, there's a couple things you never do if you want longevity as an elected official in Latin America and the Caribbean. You never reneged on IMF and World Bank agreements. You never abolish your own military over the objections of the Pentagon. You never take profits from state-owned industries and put them into quote-unquote social programs. And there became an institutional memory within the State Department, within the CIA, of visceral hatred for this man that still exists to this day. You should talk, you should talk to Ira Kurzban, his attorney. You know that right now Aristide is being sued in a civil suit in Miami federal court of all places by the U.S. installed government, alleging corruption, alleging that he had stolen tens of millions of dollars from the telephone company, which we were just describing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you make of some of the allegations against Aristide, either the corruption allegation or the allegations against members of the Lavalas party that they were acting brutally in their own right?
Well, you know, as far as the corruption charges, I like what Ira told me. I spoke to his attorney, to Aristide's attorney last week, and asked him for a response. And his response was, finally, these guys have put it in a venue where we can address the charges and really like put everything on the table. So they welcomed it. They thought that was great, finally, that they would have a chance in court. Of course, a U.S. court in Miami, but, you know, they still felt as if this were an opportunity to finally officially address those charges and what they consider to be scurrilous and baseless accusations against Heresy for corruption. As far as the violence is concerned of La Valasse, you know, the poor aren't pretty. And in Haiti, they're especially not pretty. This was a movement that had been brutalized, that had elected Aristide in 1990, as I said, with the highest plurality of vote of any head of state in the history of the hemisphere. And then there was a brutal military coup that just chewed them to pieces. Well, the children of that coup, the children, the survivors of that 1991 coup, of course, informed, were part of what was the base of the La Valasse movement that re-elected Aristide in November 2000. And you've got to remember that the opposition to Aristide originally came out of what was called the Democracy Enhancement Project, which was funded by the United States Agency for International Development in Haiti. It was led by a man who I know well, Ira Lowenthal, who worked for USAID, and they claimed ostensibly that this program was supposed to build political plurality. The more parties you have, somehow that equals more democracy. But really, and Noam Chomsky has done excellent work on this, as well as several other friends and colleagues, in showing how it really wasn't about political plurality and democracy. It was about building an opposition to the ruling party in order to serve U.S. foreign policy interests. And so, you combine this U.S. creation with paramilitary forces, which were given safe haven in the Dominican Republic, former brutal military, along with the former CIA-trained paramilitary death squad, FRAP, the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti, which was responsible for the death, murder, rape, torture of thousands of Haitians after the first military coup. These forces were given safe haven in the Dominican Republic while this opposition was being fostered, built, developed, and paid for by the U.S. government, by the Canadian government, through the Canadian International Development Agency, by EU funding, by virtue of France and the European Union. While that opposition was being funded and built, at the same time, there were these paramilitary forces that were being protected and armed and trained in the Dominican Republic, who were making regular armed incursions into Haiti, like on July the 28th, 2001, or December the 17th, 2001, where they made these huge military actions in Haiti, killing La Valasse officials, killing police officers. And if you were a member of the base of La Valasse in the capital, and you were the child of someone, you were a leader in that movement, and you were the child of someone who had been killed after the 1991 former brutal military coup against Aristide, you were in the streets burning tires, you were burning the opposition headquarters, you were protesting because you were afraid and you knew that this coup was coming. And how would anyone react? And those actions by the former brutal military in the Dominican Republic, by the former FRAP, were meant and designed specifically to provoke violence from the majority of the poor who had elected Aristide, so that the opposition, the so-called political opposition, the U.S.-trained and funded political opposition, could say, aha, look, this is yet another dictator relying upon state-sponsored violence to keep himself in power and has fallen on his own sword. And it really, what the real goal, the ultimate goal, was to take away the moral authority of the state to defend itself.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Kevin Pina, a filmmaker whose latest documentary is Haiti, The Untold Story. What are you trying to do with this documentary, Kevin?
I'm trying to drive home to people that what they've been hearing about Haiti in the mainstream media, what they've been reading about Haiti is not the truth. It's just not the reality on the ground. This is from the frame of reference of those communities that are under fire, that have continued to demonstrate in tens of thousands to ask for the return of Aristide and the return of what they consider to be their constitutional government. And of course, the big lie was that Aristide had lost the support of his people. That was really how the United States, France, and Canada justified taking Aristide out and sending him to the Central African Republic. He ended up in Bangui. I mean, who the hell knew where Bangui was until he landed there? I certainly didn't. And then, of course, we know that he went to Jamaica and from there ended up in exile in South Africa as a guest of the South African government. Today he teaches at the University of South Africa in Pretoria. You know, there's a guy who has a PhD in psychology and speaks six languages, and his wife is a well-respected attorney, and so they and their two daughters are now in South Africa. And this film chronicles what can only be described as a systematic campaign to exterminate through violence the majority political party, Jean-Bertrand Aristide's Lavalas party. And of course, we see the Haitian National Police, who are being trained by the U.S. government and the Canadian government. There are 100 RCMP, as well as special security advisors sent by the State Department, ostensibly to train the Haitian police. And the Haitian police have a clear record of summary execution, of arbitrary arrests, of shooting and murdering unarmed demonstrators, while the United Nations stands by.
You know, Kevin Pina, that was the startling thing to me when I just looked at the trailer. I haven't seen the whole film. But the focus on the United Nations. I mean, we think of UN peacekeepers. We are at least a neutral force, if not a good force, a lot of us. We, in our disgust with Bush's unilateralism, we look to the UN as a possible force for good. And yet, this film really puts a spotlight on the UN as a force of repression.
Well, there's no question. The United Nations stands accused of having targeted and murdered unarmed civilians on July the 6th of this year in an area of the capital called Cité Soleil, which has been a launching site for these massive demonstrations demanding Aristide's return.
Were you there on July?
On July the 6th? No, I was here. But you've got to remember that I work with a network of Haitian reporters that we've developed over the years that work with the Haiti Information Project. I'm the first person and the last person to see every interview and every image in its detail. I'm the editor. I'm the guy who has to put all this together. Have I checked the veracity of the claims made in that documentary footage? Absolutely. So much so that when that massacre first happened, July the 6th, the United Nations said, we only fired upon people who fired upon us, and only five bandits, they love this word, bandits, were killed that day. And so there was an article written by Andy Buncombe in The Independent in London, and he had seen the footage, I'd shown it to him, and he wrote this wonderful article. And then suddenly, the United Nations from New York, after the article came out and appeared, said, gave the most asinine denial, non-denial I've ever heard in my life. They said, well, we're not sure if anything happened, but if it did, we apologize. At that point, I was so angry. I took that footage and I met with members of the human rights section of the United Nations police in Haiti. And I said, hey, look at this. Jordanian troops and Peruvian troops went in and murdered these civilians. They took down the serial number of a smoke canister that was used, a smoke grenade that was used, that was thrown in Fredo Romulus' house, where he stands over the body, sits over the body of his wife and his two young boys, a one-year-old and a four-year-old, shot at point-blank range, a four-year-old with a headshot. He sits and gives testimony and explains in detail how the United Nations murdered his family, but there's a shot of the smoke grenade that they threw into the house beforehand, a red smoke grenade the UN Human Rights Section takes down the serial number, and I'm told through back channels that they've traced the serial number to the Jordanian contingent who were on record of having been in Cité Soleil that day. So then the United Nations says, okay, we admit something happened here, and we're going to investigate.
Did they investigate?
Never. That's all they said. We haven't heard a word from them, but why would you expect that? The United Nations is putting their credibility on the line for these upcoming sham elections, U.S.-sponsored elections in Haiti. Why on earth are they going to test or damage or take the chance of damaging that credibility by investigating themselves for human rights violations in Haiti? Of course they haven't done anything or said anything since.
But Kevin Pina, let me put it this way. Why do you think they're aligning with the Haitian military and brutal police?
Oh, good Lord. Do you know the history of the Brazilian military? Do you know the history of the Chilean military? Do you know the history of the Argentinian military? These are the three major forces that comprise and lead the United Nations contingent in Haiti today. And Lula would rather have Brazilian forces killing Haitians in Haiti than back in Brazil killing Brazilians. Do you know that Brazil this week alone was called to task by Amnesty International for summary executions and human rights violations in Brazil? Do you know the history of the Brazilian military and the Argentinian?
Yeah, but I mean, it was the Jordanian.
Of course. So you add to the mix, but it's led by the Brazilians. They are the foremost. They are the leadership role on the ground in Haiti of the United Nations military component, followed by Argentina and Chile. The three most brutal militaries with the most undemocratic, horrible human rights record in the history of the hemisphere are leading the UN contingent. Of course, then you add Jordanians to the mix. And you know what the UN response after the accusation of the Jordanians being involved in that massacre, July the 6th, you know what they did? They invited 250 more special forces from Jordan to Haiti. They just arrived 2 weeks ago. Now, you also add to the mix Chinese cops from the People's Republic of China, right? You've got Paraguayans, Uruguayans.
So, I mean, what's the lesson then for people who say, well, don't have the U.S. intervene, send the United Nations in?
The United Nations policy on the ground in Haiti is really indistinguishable from U.S. foreign policy. Come on. These three militaries have been trained, armed, are still the recipients of huge largesse of U.S. military aid. And it's the same militaries who overthrew democratic governments in their own country. And again, my friends in Brazil, Chile, and Argentina, the three countries that lead the UN mission in Haiti, the military mission, have struggled with me to understand, look, we have these so-called fledgling democracies in our country that are emerging out of the bloody history that our militaries created in our own country. And our governments are far more comfortable having them doing the bidding of U.S. foreign policy and cutting backroom deals for them to be in Haiti than have them back home today.
Kevin Pina, you talked about the father whose little kids and wife had been killed. And when we were walking over to do this interview, you said you were having personally a difficult time with this film because of the depictions of brutality and stories of brutality. How do you wrestle with that, and is there a risk of just dulling people nauseating them when they see that gore up front in this film, Haiti, the Untold Story?
Well, there's so little said about Haiti. It's been amazing. You know, I did nine city tour with this film in Canada. This is my seventh city here in the United States. And everyone who's come to see this, you know, pretty much came because they heard that something was going on in Haiti, but there's so little information available about it that it piqued their curiosity. And they, you know, they came out of concern, but also out of curiosity. I don't think that we run the danger of people becoming numb because of the images of those who are the victims, basically, of this policy in Haiti. I think more than that, people are brought to the reality, or are introduced to the reality that Haiti is not otherworldly. The United States government is deeply involved, has been deeply involved in that country. We have manipulated it. We have used it finally as the frontier of the modern coup d'etat. It used to be that we would use militaries and we would use local elites to overthrow democratically elected governments that we perceived as a threat to U.S. foreign policy. Haiti represents the modern coup d'etat in that now we don't do it traditionally. We now use armies of non-governmental organizations. We now use terms like civil society groups. You know, we now build student groups, women's groups, peasant groups in our own image to represent our interests, and we buy them to represent our interests. And Haiti has been the leading new example of this policy. We see them doing it in Venezuela against the government of Hugo Chavez today.
Kevin Pino, there are upcoming elections in Haiti. What do you expect to come of those?
I think they'll be a sham. I don't see them resolving the problem. There are structural problems as well as political problems. This upcoming vote has been paved with the blood of thousands of Haitians. And that's what you see in my film. Murdered, summarily executed by the Haitian police in the United Nations. Thousands more political prisoners, the leadership of the majority political party, La Valas, behind bars. People like Father Gerard Jean-Just, who's been deemed a prisoner of conscience by Amnesty International, arrested, beaten.
You have some footage of him in this film, too.
Beaten in a church, arrested by the United Nations, turned over to the Haitian police, remaining in jail today. Annette Auguste, the 70-year-old folk singer, beautiful woman, has been wasting behind bars since May the 10th, 2004, when she was arrested by U.S. Marines. And then, of course, thousands more of the La Valas political party who've been forced into internal and external exile. So these elections have been prepared with this campaign to eliminate through violence the majority political party. And that's just the icing on the cake, the tip of the iceberg. You add to the fact that in the year 2000, when there were elections in Haiti, there were 12,000 polling stations. For these elections, they're only planning 600 polling stations, 5% of the number of polling stations they had in the year 2000.
Kevin Pino, we're just about out of time. I wanted you to tell people who are listening here how they might get hold of this film or get in touch with the Haiti Information Project.
Well, you can see our work and the articles we've written at www.haitiaction.net. That's www.haitiaction.net. If you want to download a trailer of my new film, Haiti, The Untold Story, you can go to www.telejaw.net. And Telejaw is spelled TELEDYOL.net. You can also look at my articles on blackcommentator.com. If you want to hear my early reports on Haiti via the radio, live on the ground, www.flashpoints.net.
Kevin Pino, thanks so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.